Last week, if you were here, was a little fun, tense. We went right for it. And so today, I kind of want to continue where we were. If you weren't here, you'll catch on pretty quickly, but there's some things to maybe catch up and to continue talking about, in my opinion. So first, some catch-ups. We've been talking about the refugee immigration ban, whatever the heck word you want to use for it. Global Neighborhood, I met with them, with Brent on Wednesday, and Global Neighborhood works with refugees here in Spokane, and we talked a lot about what we can do as the church to support and love refugees who are here. And Brent really wasn't sure, to be honest. He realized there's a lot of momentum, there's a lot of people who want to do something, but we want to do something that matters and something that means something to refugees and not just so we feel better. So Brent is taking some time to try to think about what that means. But in the meantime, there is a March 4th fundraiser for Global Neighborhood. It's a barbecue thing. It's on our website. It's also in the newsletter. And if nothing else, Brent was saying, please, can we just pack the house on that and show the city, there might be some news there even, that we are in support of refugees and that we love refugees and that we care about these people as human beings and respect them and show them dignity. So encourage you to come if you can. It's March 4th, so you could go pedal for pedal for power, and then go help some refugees. And that night, you're going to feel like $1 million because you just changed the world a little bit. And then Friday, we talked about the family of Nassar and, where are you guys, Rob and Clay? Najia, yes, right? So Najia. Nassar and Najia and their three children, they are recently came from Afghanistan a couple weeks ago, refugees. And Rob and I went to five houses on Friday, picked up some goods, and brought them over to their house. And of course, once we got there, we were stuck there with all kinds of goodies and like three cups of tea and all kinds of fun times. So the update on that is, first, thank you, because this family was smiling and overwhelmed with all kinds of good furniture and toys and books and clothes that you gave them. And that is awesome. And that is love and that is Jesus. Secondly, I know Rob and Clay hate this kind of stuff, which means they deserve it even more. But these two are awesome. And going with your family, I mean, Leia's over there just big kisses on slobbery little Omar who's sick, and I'm like, ugh, germaphobe, and Leia's just, their daughter's just like, mwah, and they're all just hugging them and kissing them, and it just was so inspiring and fun to be around. So if you don't know Rob and Clay, go talk to them. Go talk to them about refugees. Rob told me a little story about someone who was giving him a massage who thought that refugees were the same as illegal immigrants. If you think that, please, please talk to Rob and Clay, or me, or anyone, or Google it. Refugees are not illegal immigrants. And it was awesome to surround this family with love and encourage you, if you have other ideas, even crazy ideas. Rob and I were talking like, you know, I really love Wi-Fi in my house. No one ever thinks of providing Wi-Fi for refugee family because, I mean, they're refugees. Yeah, well, I like it, and they do too. They know how to use a computer. Shocking. Know how to use an iPhone even. Whoa. And they like Wi-Fi. So if one of you thinks maybe, hey, you know what? I'd love to give them Wi-Fi for 6 months. Talk to us. Or cable even, you know? Rob was even saying, I felt kind of bad putting a TV on there. Because who wants a TV in this world? Besides all of us and every human being. So again, if you think of something that's beyond like a bed or pots or pans, which are awesome, something that's a luxury or maybe even a little indulgent for this family, let us know and we would love to give it to them. And again, it was just awesome to be with them and I hope there's more from them, maybe even getting them here and sharing some of their story. Then yesterday, I went to an event with a bunch of pastors and spiritual leaders, which normally I get scared of. But it was World Relief sponsored, and they just talked about the refugee crisis and where we're at. And some quick things I'll share with you really quick. Actually, I'm just going to share you this story. Kent was there with me. And Abdi. Abdi, this guy got up there. And I got home and I was recounting it to my wife, and I started sobbing at our kitchen counter. I don't know if it was just a week's worth of emotion or this man, but he is a Somali refugee. He's been living in Kenya for years. He talked about his dreams being dashed and having no dreams for the future or the past. These refugee camps, just so you know, are slums. I mean, there's barely clean water, there's barely food, there's no security. It's terrible living conditions. And so this man came with his mom and nine siblings, and his mom has raised them all. We're talking about an amazing woman, obviously, an amazing family. And he was just sharing his story, and it was overwhelming. And at one point, and this is where I started crying to my wife, the interviewer said, "What would you like all of these people, these church leaders, to go and tell their friends? If there was one thing you would like them to go tell their friends, what would it be?" And he started crying, which of course made everyone start crying. And he later told us that he hasn't been this emotional in years. But he just started sobbing, and he said, "Please tell them we are not terrorists. Please tell them we are not here to rape you. We are not here to hurt you in any way." And he's just sobbing, barely able to get these words out. And he said, "My whole life I've been blamed. And I've been told, go back to your country," because he was in Kenya and he's from Somalia in a refugee camp. And he says, "Blame, you're the problem, you're the problem, you're the problem. Go back to your country, go back to your country, go back to your country." And he said, "I finally get to the United States, which is my dream." And he said, "I have nothing in your eyes, but I have everything in my eyes. But here I'm starting to hear the words again of being blamed and go back to your country." And he said, "The fact that you are all here means that you support us and you love us, and thank you." And he was crying again. And it was just this overwhelming experience. The whole day was pretty overwhelming. There was also a single mom from Iraq whose husband was lost fighting for the U.S. military, which, by the way, is what a lot of these refugees are dealing with. They fought for us, and now, no thank you. So there's a lot of pain and wrong and injustice going on, and it was incredibly emotional to be there. And again, the encouragement for us as the church is to be Jesus. And the head of World Relief said something I thought was pretty profound. He said, "You know, we don't want to talk politics," and I agree. We don't want to talk sides. But if we're afraid to talk about how politics affects society and humans on our earth, then we're doing nothing. And so that's what we're talking about here. And while there, I also, ironically enough, people came up to me, "Ryan, man, I heard you really brought it at Branches last week." Like, yeah, I guess. "I heard you swore like 7 times. It's like, I think I swore once. Like, no, that's not what I heard. I heard you were just bringing like 8 times, 7 times. I also heard you wanted to be a Muslim. Like, really? Okay, I don't, you know what? That's fine. Yeah, I want to be a Muslim. Then I go over to somebody else. "Hey, man, whoa, I heard you really brought it at Branches last week." Like, what the, is anyone else not bringing it? I mean, why are we like suddenly the ones bringing it in the world in Spokane? How'd it go, man? Was it like pretty, did you get some emails? You know, I didn't, you know, Branches is cool. We can talk about this stuff. And I really didn't get emails, and the ones I did who disagreed with me even were awesome. So thank you. Thank you for being a place where we can talk about this stuff. And if someone approaches you and says that you go to the church where the pastor swears 8 times and wants to be a Muslim, just say, "Yeah, I do." And it's fine. What, do you have a problem with it? Did your church talk about refugees? Oh, man. Okay, so last week, Clyde isn't here this morning. I don't think he is. If you don't know Clyde, you should get to know Clyde. He kind of ended with this perfect love casts out fear thing, right? And I wanted to come back to that because I think it's really, really important. Perfect love drives out fear. And we say this a lot, and we talk about fear a lot here, and we talk about love a lot here, but I really have been thinking about this statement in terms of where we're at. And it's not only on a global scale. Believe me, this week I was reminded that there are many people in this community right now who are grieving over the loss of a marriage, the loss of a job, the loss of a loved one, the loss of potential life. There's just hard stuff happening right here too. It's very easy to think this way, but there's a lot going on. And so what does this perfect love drives out fear mean? And I think we have a pretty good definition of love often. We get love. We get what it means. We went over it last week, 1 Corinthians 13. We talk about it. But I'm not sure we really have a good definition of fear sometimes. Because if that's the thing that we're trying to drive out, what is it? And you'll hear conflicting definitions on fear and even conflicting philosophies. I mean, Elizabeth Gilbert says fear is in the car with you. It's in the back seat and she just doesn't let it touch the radio or steer the car. Susan David says courage is not the elimination of fear, it's fear walking. And some will say fear is what has got us to where we are as humans today. I mean, fear is necessary for evolution, and there are good things about fear. Anthony DeMello says the little cool little saying of what is love? It's the absence of fear. What is it that we fear? Love. And it's classic DeMello, like, whoa. Wait, what does it mean? And we even had it on our board, and like, yeah, I love that. I agree with it. What does it mean again? The absence of fear. So love is the absence of fear, and we fear the absence of fear. And so what does all that mean? Well, what do we do with this fear thing? I was with, again, some 70 and 80-year-old amazing people at Fairwood Retirement Center. Drew, I learned your grandmother was there from your brother last night. And I was so bummed I didn't know because these people were so, what was her name again? Dorothy. Gosh. You guys, I fell in love with these people. And I didn't want to go, believe me. I would go talk to some old retirees. I mean, what could be more boring on the face of the earth? And then, as is usually the case, Ryan, humble you, shut up, wow. And so we had these amazing conversations about millennials and progressive Christianity, or progressive America, or where we're going as a country, or what's even happening. And we talked about hell and heaven and atheism and Republicans and Democrats and you name it, we covered it. And I'm still trying to figure out why it worked so well. And I know I keep telling people about it because it just, we disagreed and we were able to have this conversation about the most controversial things and still love each other at the end. In fact, love each other more than we did when we started. And they were, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I was, thank you, thank you, thank you. And it was such a good discussion. During it, there's this guy. And whenever you're speaking, if you've ever been a speaker, you know, you sense the room. Like right now, I'm sensing it. You guys think you're hiding, you're not. I know what everyone's feeling. I see the arms crossed, Jordan, I see you. You know, and I'm picking up vibes of like, oh boy, that person got really mad, that person's bored. That person's really into it. Well, there's this one guy in the back, this older guy, and I'm watching him. I'm like, whew, I don't know, man. I feel like this guy is not loving this right now. And I think we're going a little too far. And I would say stuff, okay, now guys, get ready, get ready. This one's going to really scare you. It's going to really freak you out, but here's the deal. And they'd all, whew, it's like a wave crashed through them. They're like, okay, let's go into it. But this guy, he's just kind of cold back there. So we're wrapping it up. Any more questions? Atheism. Let's talk about atheism. Okay? Let's talk about it. Do you believe there are atheists? Or I don't even remember the question. I was kind of like, holy, I mean, I don't know, actually. If you're an atheist, you don't believe in a certain God, so we should define what that God is. Da-da-da-da-da. We have this little, like, back and forth. And then he says, there are no atheists in the foxholes. And I say, yeah. Was that a question? Or, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I've never been in a foxhole. That's kind of a good saying, you know, in war. I'm still like, what is this guy? I don't know. I'm not vibing. What's going on here? So we eventually end. He walks up to me. Oh, no. Hey, do you think anyone really dies an atheist? And I said, I don't know. That's a great question. I would like to think no, but I don't know. I said, you know, one of my favorite stories is Jesus on the cross with the two criminals, and the criminal doesn't really say anything except, hey, don't make fun of this guy to the other criminal, and Jesus says, today you'll be with me in paradise. It's a pretty cool story. There's not really a lot happening there, and Jesus is saying, you'll be with me in paradise. He goes, well, my dad was an atheist. This guy's 85, maybe. My dad was an atheist his whole life. Pretty mean guy, I didn't want anything to do with God. But on his deathbed, My mom said, he looked up and said, I'm ready. He said, do you think my dad's in heaven? Like, oh, wow. And I said, heck yeah. I said, why do we have this view of this God who's always so like, okay, well, oh boy. You kind of said, acknowledged me, no, this God can't wait to hug your father. This God cannot wait to embrace your father. This God is reaching out with everything this God has to embrace everything. And I don't know if there's something that has to be made or some decision, but this God loves your father as much as anything in the universe. And he almost got weepy with this, oh my gosh, do you think my dad might be in heaven? Which made me think a lot of things. One, everyone has a story. And two, the fear that has paralyzed this man for so much of his life. This wondering, oh man, did my dad make it? Did my dad make it? Did my dad make it? And it's said that our view of God is our view of ourselves. I mean, our view of how God treats humanity is the view of how we treat humanity. And so many of us have this view of God that is up there with all these things that have got to be checked off. And if we don't, man, it's you're out. And that's how we treat people. I don't know, man. I mean, I'm going to love you with everything I've got, but first we've got to have these things checked off. Versus this God who can't wait to embrace, is anticipating, is excited, is inspired, is moving as much as this God can to embrace every single human being on this planet. As soon as they're ready, whatever ready means, but I think ready means you want to be loved. Want to experience love? Yeah. And that's how we should be. And I was just struck again, what does this have to do with fear? This fear is prevalent everywhere. I mean, right now, I can't go a day without reading an article about fear in America. It's running us. It's our dictator. And I don't mean that as some subtle quip on Trump. No, fear actually is running the nation. Doesn't have to do with anything. It's just that's what we're all, we're driven by fear. I mean, what are things that we're afraid of? Just shout them out. The economy. You guys, come on. Terrorists. Immigrants. The environment. It's both. Yeah, just keep going. Crime. Violence. Trump. Unknown. I mean, it's all we hear is fear. Fear, 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 fear. And it's both sides. I'm afraid of what he's going to do. I'm afraid of what he's not going to do. I'm afraid of what's going to happen to this. I'm afraid for refugees. I'm afraid for our country. I'm afraid about Russia. I'm afraid about China. I'm afraid about my house. I'm afraid about my... But again, what is fear? And isn't there some good things to fear? So the Greek myths, they have Phobos and Deimos, right? And they're the twins of Ares, the god of war. And it's said that Deimos was terror, and he would go behind Ares, his father, into war, and Phobos was kind of this scattering or fleeing or withdrawing. And it was also said that their mother, Aphrodite, the god of love, these two twins would go behind for the fear of loss. But the Greek definition of Phobos, or phobia, is this withdrawing or fleeing because we feel inadequate. And there's lots of ways to describe words, and words are just hard in themselves. But for me right now, fear, a withdrawing or fleeing because of a feeling of inadequacy. Just think about it. Withdrawing, moving away, backing up, I'm not adequate to take on that. So when the angels come, don't be afraid. Whoa, Oh, you can handle this. Don't withdraw. Don't flee because you're inadequate. Walking on water. Don't be afraid. You can do this. Don't be afraid. Your daughter will be all right. Don't be afraid. Don't withdraw and flee because you feel inadequate. Perfect love, of course, drives that out because perfect love says what? You're adequate. You're not only adequate, you're amazing, you're worthy, you're a child of God, you're a painting, you're a masterpiece, you're beautiful, you're capable of changing the world. The last thing you should ever feel is inadequate. So don't withdraw and flee. So what do we do with all of that? Because there's a lot of feelings with the economy, with terrorism, with refugees, with Mexican immigrants, with China. I mean, I don't know, this goes on and on, the environment. Just withdraw. I can't handle this. Withdraw, withdraw, withdraw. And if there's one thing we see in refugees, it's the same thing. I saw it in his face on yesterday. Here I am, I'm being blamed again. I'm inadequate to even be here. Withdraw, flee. Perfect love says, no, 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 no. No, you come on in. You come in. And so it's almost given me this tangible, okay, fighting inadequacy, this feeling of adequacy, which of course comes to shame again. Fighting shame. Neil deGrasse Tyson, he's a very outspoken atheist, also an amazing human being. He said his philosophy of life is basically deep concern for the plight of those who are less fortunate than me. Now, this is an atheist. This is why I side with the atheists sometimes more than the Christians. Deep concern for the plight of those who are less fortunate than me. That drives my life. And I don't understand how anyone cannot have that. Ignatius, kind of the opposite of Neil deGrasse Tyson, in many ways, and yet full circle. If the church is not marked by a care of the needy, the poor, the oppressed, it is living a form of heresy. And that's not branches, that's you, me. If we are not living lives marked by concern of the needy and the oppressed and the marginalized, then we are heretics. Now, heretics are thrown around for a lot of things, rarely about that, which is the only time it should be. When we talk about heresy, it's not caring for people. And that is where perfect love drives out fear. That is what we are to be about. That is where we are more than adequate, and we don't run into the corners. We move into the darkness, and we drive out any feelings of inadequacy on any human being. On another level, what I'm seeing is a stage 4 cancer patient described it as the tyranny of positivity. Think about that one. The tyranny of positivity. And what she said is, when you have cancer, everyone just tells you, keep up a good outlook, man. Stay positive, stay positive, stay positive, stay positive, stay positive, stay positive. And she said, if it had been about staying positive, most of my friends would be alive. They're the most positive people on earth. And so what it does now is, if I die, I wasn't positive enough. So now it's back on me, which is what we love to do with people who are hurting, by the way. Your fault. Because, again, we don't like pain, we don't like suffering, we want to just always separate ourselves from it. So stay positive is even a sense of stay positive, stay positive, stay positive, you can beat this, you can beat this. Oh, they didn't, they weren't positive enough. The tyranny of positivity. Can't get those words out of my mind. And so there's this temptation, I was talking to Lisa this morning. Some of us are just, you know what, I'm done, I'm out. I can't read the news anymore. I'm out, I'm just going to... Even we were saying, I'm not looking outside at the snow anymore. I'm not reading the news. I'm not reading social media. I'm just going to sit in my basement and watch Netflix. And the world will be okay because I'll be happy. That's just fear. That's just fleeing. That's running because of inadequacy. And that is not what we are called to do. I'm reading Howard Schultz's book on Starbucks. Such a good book, you guys. Whew. Onward. But okay, I learned this thing about coffee beans. Arabica? Is that how you pronounce it? Huh? Arabica, yes. Arabica beans, right? And it's kind of more of the fruit where the beans come from. But Arabica coffee beans are high stress conditions. Drought, sun, high altitude. It's a stressful life for this bean. And yet it's this bean that is the good, tasting, powerful coffee that we all like. It's more expensive. Starbucks, for the record, has only served this bean in their 40 years. A little plug for Starbucks. Because I'm reading his book right now. I'll plug him. These beans experience stress, and they're the best beans. Robusta beans are grown at lower altitudes, safe environment, everything goes great, much cheaper, and a pretty weak flavor. And I think you know where this is going, right? I mean, you can't help but compare. We're all kind of living the higher stressed bean life right now. And there's this feeling of, oh my gosh, the whole world's falling apart, or there's nothing I can do, or I'm going to go into the corner and stop from everything. And this is the time when we become the flavorful aroma, the strong taste of love and the divine and God in the world. This is what makes us that. So don't run from it. Go into it with love and with a feeling of adequacy and power and inspiration. Because this world is filled with people who are desperate for it. And I met many of them yesterday, and I met them on Friday, and I met them on this week. And if you can't find any, come talk to me. And if we're going to do anything in the world, go to those people, which is what Jesus did, and these people over here who just want to critique and spout off all kinds of crap all day long, just ignore it. It's not doing anything anyway. Listen, observe the news, and go to the people who want you. Also, one little last thing. To feel adequate, you also have to have some knowledge. And the church should be the most knowledgeable people in this country right now. And I'm so tired of the church saying ridiculous things like refugees are the same as illegal immigrants. I mean, come on, church. Love God with all your mind. That means you actually have to go and research some things. You can't hear one news source, I don't care who it is, and think that's the truth, especially in this day and age. Go spend some time with people. Talk to people who are with refugees. Again, if you don't know anyone, I'll be glad to hook you up with some actual refugees even. Learn, research, love God with your mind. Figure out things. And don't take this just, I can't learn those things. There's too much information. No, dive in. Become sources of truth, if nothing else. And this doesn't mean so you can argue, but it does mean so you can correct ignorance. And ignorance is not a bash on someone. It's just a bash on someone who's lazy to learn. And I get lazy sometimes. And if you're lazy, just don't talk. That's the other thing. If you don't know, that's fine, but don't be spreading your opinion all over Facebook. Just say, I don't know. And maybe it would spur like this whole I don't know movement, which would be way better than where we are right now. Okay, so I got this thing. It's our new little toy for Branches. It's called a catch box. Yeah, I'm so stoked on this. So we were at Seth Godin, and he had one of these. Last week, we had some people just respond, and it was like, oh, I couldn't hear it on the recording. I can't hear him. Problem solved. Okay, Casey, is this thing on?
Check, check.
Okay. So what you do is you can throw this thing, you catch it, and you just talk into it. Yeah, isn't it dope? So good. Okay, so I'm thinking, you know, this could change our whole church. We're going to start having a little more interaction. So I just gave you some things to think about. There's a lot going on in the world. Maybe you're hurting. Maybe you just want to share a story. Maybe you want to say, Ryan, I completely disagree with you. Maybe you want to say anything. We're going to have a little moment of some interaction if you want it. Okay, so first person, just tell me. We'll throw it, and you know you want to hold this thing and experiment with it. So does anybody have anything to say at all? Dave Baird?
So this...
Yeah, dude, isn't that... Yes! You like that?
I really want one of these, babe. Your talk reminded me of my favorite poem. It's real short. Our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure. It's our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. Your playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we're liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others.
Bam. Anybody else? That's beautiful.
Yeah, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Ryan, what about the other kind of fear? What about demos? What about the powerful fear, the fear that does scatter and fracture people and attempt to damage us? You know, the fear that has power. What about that?
Well, all fear has power, right?
I mean, yeah, what? But there are these, like, systemic forces of fear, right? These forces of fear that do try to overwhelm us, not because of our own inadequacy, but because there are powers working against us in the world.
But what? Yeah, good question. I mean, I don't know if I'd necessarily have an answer. I think fear is really complicated, but I love the fear. I love the idea of, at the end of the day, any kind of fear is that I am inadequate. I mean, I was with a girl who's going to be sharing here for Lent, and I'm really excited about this week, who basically has, I can't even go through the list of things that have gone bad in her life. And it's kind of one of these stories where you're just, at some point, this is ridiculous. And she told me, she looked at me and said, I said, humans, me, we are scared to death of ever being in your shoes. And that's why we say all of the mean things that we say to you. And she's heard plenty of them. And that's why we give all of these excuses as to why you're in this place. I said, because there is everything in me that is terrified of being in your shoes. And she said, yes, but people need to know there's nothing to be afraid of here. And I said, wow, that's why we need to hear that from you. There's nothing to be afraid of. But I don't know. I'm thinking every kind of fear at some level is that I'm inadequate to handle it. Right? I mean, if America falls apart and I'm out of food, how will I ever handle it? So I have this fear at night of what, I can't let that happen. Well, what if I can handle it? Then suddenly I'm moving into better places of adequacy instead of inadequacy. But again, I don't know if I can just answer. It's a great question. And there's fear that are valid. But I think when fear rules, we're in trouble. No matter what it is. If we're guiding our life by fear, I think we're in trouble. Versus love. No, yeah?
Sure.
I mean, not that I do it.
Yeah.
I do sometimes, and it feels really good. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you just take it to the other extreme, and you know it. I mean, there's people that won't go to the apartments where the refugees live because I might get my car broken into. Mm-hmm. Or at some level, I don't leave my house because something might happen to me. Mm-hmm. And the people we admire in this world are the ones that just say, you know what, to fear and go for it. And they change the world. And sometimes bad things happen to them, and they say, it's all right, there's nothing to be afraid of, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But again, it's hard. Mm-hmm. If anyone else has anything to comment on that, feel free. Okay. Sometimes I get nervous, gonna break it, but yes. Good catch, by the way. Okay.
I was wondering if you might be able to touch on this. One hurdle that I'm finding, and I'm not coming from a place of anything, but or anywhere from being just positive and empowering in my message. I find that I'm seeing a lot of attacks being sort of like, if you have a positive or an empowering message, you're just showing your privilege. And I think it's challenging. I studied white privilege in college, you know, like it's such a huge part of just my psyche as far as understanding and being compassionate, you know, thinking about being in other people's shoes. But I'm finding it's become really insane, you know, where there's a lot of just, nope, you actually can't have an opinion on this because of your privilege. You know, this assumption that people certain people are born with a silver spoon in their mouths, and there is truth to that. But I'm wondering what your take is on how to kind of respond to that, or how to be with that.
Yeah. Also, seriously, if any of you there are experts in this room in some of these things, feel free to be like, hey, I got that one, Ryan. If no one does, I'll give it a shot. But we are white. I'm a white educated male. Yeah, I mean, it is kind of ridiculous. I have honestly nothing to be afraid of. The CEO of World Relief said, which World Relief's losing all their funding, by the way, because no refugees are coming in. They're paid per refugee, so they just lost their entire budget for the next 4 months. And then after that, their budget's been slashed in less than half, so they're laying off staff. They're cutting down buildings unless people donate, which you can also do. But he said, I'm a white male. If I lose my job, I'll find another one. But this organization has to stay. So even for me to try to even answer that question as though I'm not privileged is a little difficult, because I am. But at the end of the day, I mean, also talk is cheap. And when I'm with Muhammad, he doesn't care if I'm a white educated male. He just cares that I hug him and say, what do you need today? And so some of this sometimes it's a good point. I mean, talk is everywhere. And whites love to talk because it's also a great way to feel good about ourselves, like we did something. Slacktivism, I mean, it's a whole word now, a new word. And yeah, it's easy to have opinions. But love is a verb. Love is action, you know? And if when you're doing it, I don't think anyone really cares. I mean, I haven't heard that necessarily critique of people who are in Africa providing clean water, or people who are in the inner cities solving crime rates, or people who are doing anything. It's not like, oh, get out of here. It's, okay, thanks. It's when you're spouting off, you know what? And I think it's just a way of saying, would you just shut up and actually do something? And that's kind of a fair critique, even for me.
Well, I actually removed myself from social media, and that's been a huge focus for me. And then, you know, I manage my business pages through my husband's. And so sometimes I see, and a nonprofit. And so sometimes I see these things like, oh, well, now if you're not on social media, it's you're just showing your privilege because you don't have to care.
Listen, there's so much. It's distraction.
This is a privileged child who is a second generation here in the United States, who's worked very hard,
yes,
and you know, has paid her student loans, who co-directs a nonprofit. And, you know, certainly goes out and does her work every day.
You bet.
And is of service.
Oh, no. So I'm not implying, sorry, if I was implying,
no,
you're not.
No, I mean, yeah.
Far
no,
be it from
I mean,
me.
But she's not, you know, she was certainly not fighting words with words. You know, she's all about action.
But, I mean, we know because we do it. We live in a society that wants to do everything we possibly can to prevent us from actually doing something. It's the same, it's the guy who comes up to me in the grocery store parking lot. Can you feed me? What are the immediate responses? This guy's just going to use it for drugs. This guy's, he's in some TV show where he's just trying, he's making $40,000 a year. I saw it once on NBC 8 years ago. This guy's going to buy alcohol. This guy, here's the thing. Have you ever been in a grocery store parking lot, asked anyone for food? No. Then buy him a meal. Like, how hard is this? But we love... Wait, don't, you're, it's just go do it. Mm-hmm. And Jesus just did it. Mm-hmm. And everyone critiqued him plenty. Mm-hmm. And eventually killed him, which is the hard part of this whole message. Mm-hmm. Because they eventually killed him. And That's why we probably come up with a ton of excuses as to why to not to do it, because we know, man, if I really go into this, whew, what's it going to cost me? I mean, I was having these thoughts, if it really gets to the point, which there's rumors, which I hate talking about rumors because who knows, but talking about deporting immigrants who are here. I mean, if Muhammad is going to get deported, am I going to say, you're coming to live with me? And then what if he comes and lives with me and the police come to my house and I'm like, oh my gosh, am I Anne Frank? I mean, and am I going to do it? Am I going to do it? Because that now we're talking some real stuff. And so it's just anything we can do to get away from that real stuff, we tend to do. And so we come up with all kinds of excuses this way and that way. And a lot of talk is what most of it is. And it's just, and again, I am as guilty of it as anybody. And I also talk here every week, which is a little bit hypocritical. But hopefully it inspires me and you to do something with the talk instead of just to talk. I mean, I don't know. We all know it. We know in our heart of hearts when this stuff's excuses, I think, and when it's not. But again, it's complicated. Maybe one more, because, you know, it's just so fun. Now you, you're going, Jordan? Okay.
Yeah, unless someone else wants
no,
to go.
No, go, Jordan. Okay. Jordan's so, he's got stuff to say all the time.
So it sounds like, you know, these grandiose ideas we're talking about, like fear and love, like once you get down to the root of it, it sounds like identity. It always starts with identity and where we come from and who we really are. And something that has helped me just every baby step of the way I take every day is starting with essentially who am I? And I have a quote here by Richard Rohr. If you haven't read Richard Rohr before, he's got a way with words that'll just help you see life and everyone else better.
Amen.
Says, the love in you, which is the spirit in you, always somehow says yes. Love is not something you do. Love is someone you are. It is your true self. Love is where you came from, and love is where you're going. It's not something you can buy. It's not something you can attain. It is the presence of God within you, called the Holy Spirit, or what some theologians name uncreated grace. The very nature of God, therefore, is to seek out the deepest possible communion and friendship with every last creature on this earth. And if we are divine image bearers, that's God's agenda, then that's also our agenda, because they're one and the same thing.
And if you live that, there's no room for fear. I mean, is this, like, really fear? I'm living this. We're going to do communion because it's already kind of late. And we can just turn that little bad boy off. Also, when it moves through the air, the microphone automatically goes off. Pretty sweet. So there's no shh. Okay, sorry. Technology, communion, you know. Okay, communion. The table, bread, wine, symbols that God is a God of love. Period. And that there are a lot of forces in this land, in this world, that will use anything they can to take down love, to disturb love, to destroy love, to eradicate love, to prevent us from loving. And this God says they will never win. They can't. Because if you lose your life, there will be something better that comes from it. So take this bread, drink this wine, and then I would encourage you, we're going to try and stay a little quiet, we'll have some music playing, just pray. So it's kind of a moment of silence with communion, but there is so much to be silent for, to think about, to listen, to be inspired, to be convicted, to be encouraged, to be grateful. Just take some time to listen. I know this week, that's another story, forget it. Just take some time to listen. And maybe even take the bread, dip it in, and bring it back to your chair. Think about these basic, you can't get any more basic than bread and wine, food, meals, sustenance, survival. And that these are the images, the greatest images of love in this world from God to us. think about sin and how sin masks off the divine in all of us, and that Jesus died in order to get rid of all this, these masks and layers of who we really are and who God really sees us as. Think about how you can do that this week. Think about how God can help you do this that this week. Think about how you can see God in everyone this week, including Trump, including refugees, including judges, including senators, including Facebook people, Twitter people. Yeah, we're all children of God, and some of us more aware than others, but our prayer is that we're all aware of who we actually are and what we're capable of in this world. And let communion be that.